Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today my guest is Mr. Richard Blank. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Doc, how are you doing today? I'm so happy to be on your podcast.
Yes, all the way from Costa Rica. So this is pretty exciting.
It is exciting. Plus, I like your book. That was a wonderful color choice that you chose. It really stands out. So happy to be here. We gravitate towards each other. I always believe that water seeks its own level. And after seeing so many episodes, I just wanted to touch base and be a guest.
Well,
And
thank you. I
my
appreciate it because
story begins in Northeast Philadelphia. Okay, I was a Philly boy. And when I was growing up, I loved languages. I always thought that Spanish speakers were cool. From time to time, I could pick up vocabulary. And there are certain professions and pastimes that come easy for people, or they just enjoy it. So it doesn't seem like work. And so a lot of my friends had much more maturity, structure, and discipline than I did in high school. And they decided to go on to Ivy League to study medicine, law, architecture, and engineering. I couldn't do any of that stuff. So I decided to double down on my second or my favorite class. It was Spanish. And when I graduated to Proud Abington, I wanted to be a language major. And so I chose nice weather. I went to the Southwest and was a wildcat at the University of Arizona. I did 5 years. I did a super senior year. I did it slow, slow, low, and steady. But the cool thing was, I spent my junior year abroad in Spain. I was there for 2 semesters and stayed over Christmas so I could backpack. And that was one of the times of my life where I shed some skin. I grew up a lot because I wasn't forced to go to museums. I wanted to go to museums. I wanted to see ruins and have a better discipline, time management, so I could get it all in. Probably didn't watch any movies that year or TV. I read more books than I knew. And I would have these conversations with individuals on the Your Rail train or in the youth hostels or in the bars and the clubs. And I was really drinking life. And when I separated myself from Philadelphia, as much as I had the courage and the vigor like Rocky, I was also out of my element. It wasn't home court advantage anymore. And so sometimes you don't want to be the loud one or the pushy one or the one with the most expectations. The best thing to do is be eclectic and just let everybody else fill your new plate, because it's exciting and new. And people have so many amazing things to share in regards to their ethics and how they feel about themselves and how they were raised. So guess what, my friend? I was sized up. When I'm meeting people that speak multiple languages, they could cook, right? They knew how to like sew or do other things, you know, where they could be a homemaker. I was like, wait a second, I got to really step my game up, because look, I got to cut my shirt. I got to learn how to clean this stuff. And so I saw people myself that were raised differently, and I respected more of what they raised and how they were raised. And so when I came back to the United States, where there's a lot of leisure and comfort, I decided to grind and do it the tough way. And so when I graduated college, I was kind of lost still. I worked for the importers of Corona and family business. But doctor, when I was 27 years old, my cousin gave me a one in a million opportunity. He said, Richie, why don't you come to Costa Rica and work at our buddy's call center for a couple months and teach English? Well, you understand psychology. If you can get past your parents' guilt, if you can build on momentum, if you're already on your 99th positive reinforcement, how many different tell signs and stars being aligned do you need to see before you move forward and do this? And so when I came here, it was only supposed to be for 2 months, but I worked at my friend's center for 4 years, learned the business, fell in love, got married. And 16 years ago, I started my own call center, and whew, what a long breath. So that's where we are today on your amazing podcast, Telling Tall Tales.
Beautiful. So when you left high school, went to college, started Spanish, you didn't really have a plan except for to learn Spanish. Did you have a plan?
Well, as Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan till you get punched in the mouth. But how about this, my friend? I knew that if I were the only one that could speak Spanish out of my friends, Might get a job. Maybe I can translate for a doctor or an attorney and look good that day. I saw the opportunities and I saw what it could do as an Anglo-Saxon, not just learning a second language, but when you meet someone that speaks English and I'm speaking Spanish, there's that mutual respect of dedicated practice and cognitive skills. You're seeing someone that is really in this. And thankfully, the Latino community is so they really embrace you and encourage you. And they are not snickering or laughing if you make a mistake in the preterite imperfect tense or forget to use the subjunctive tense. It's the grammar things that really are not fun to do, but you
No.
have to do it within the first 6 months to give you your foundation, because you just can't memorize Duolingo or certain phrases. It doesn't work that way. It's like a trapeze artist. It's too far away to catch. You really need little first downs, not long touchdowns. I'm the kind of person, doctor, that needs to collect 100 pennies to make a dollar. I'm a panning for gold kind of cat. Do I want to hurt myself and do it the hard way? No. But I do believe by slicing and dicing and even cutting it on angles, by repeating it and marinating it and just mastering it that way, it's not rushed. There's a pace to it. And I was taking this at an exceptionally comfortable pace because you can build upon what you already have. But then again, all the world's a stage. I could go out and have coffee and speak for 3 hours, go see a movie, go dance, go read a book. So it just wasn't a conference or certain medicine or something you need to download or have equipment to. I gave myself, thankfully, a luxury trade, or I'm a speaker, a linguist. And so for me, instead of sacrificing, dedicating, traveling, and investing time to go to class, go to workshops or chemistry classes and stuff, I just said, let's have fun and do this. So every time that I spent watching a movie or speaking to my friends, I was like, wait a second, that's like studying. This is cool. It's not like I was hanging out with math kids back in the day. I didn't want to do that. And it was always boring being in the library, like looking at books and taking notes. I didn't want to do that either, but come on, Doc, let's go out and get some ice cream and let's go learn the 50 flavors in Spanish. We'll do that for an hour. That'll be great.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm all about mastery. And everybody learns differently. So I know when I'm learning, when I'm first learning something, I'm a little bit slow, but I'm absorbing everything and I'm looking at it and I'm working it and I'm practicing it. But once I got it, that's it. I got it inside and out. And not everybody learns that way. And it sounds like you were, learning that way slowly, but also using your world as your classroom, which is a lot more fun than sitting in the library, like you said.
It's terrible. Think of it like this. Let's just say you go to a party where you only know one person and there's 100 people there. You're going to go hang out with your buddy in the corner. At least there's a safe place, there's an anchor, there's an area to start. And then from there you get your confidence and you start branching out and getting introductions. And for me, my thing needed to be through play or through things that I enjoyed. If I were going to build vocabulary, it couldn't be the one in a million time I got to learn something about a pipe somewhere underneath a drawer. I don't want that word. I'd rather learn, as I say, the doctor and I want the ice cream words and the color words and clothing words and car words. And why? Because it's fun. And that's the things I want to talk about. And so, did I make it easy for myself? No, but I got to choose. I didn't want to force myself for the boring stuff. I wanted fun in the beginning, and it made it fun. And so it didn't seem like a forced march or a chore. So yes, my friend, I agree with you. Find your anchor, find your place to begin, and then build your rippled circle from there.
Exactly. And I'm thinking about, so I studied Spanish and I'm still not fluent in Spanish. I can understand a lot more than I can speak. And
Yeah.
I remember those books, pages of just rows of the different tenses of the verbs. And it's just horrible to look at those. So did you find a way to make that fun, or did you just do it in everyday life to get all that down?
Great question. down for you in different ways in which I learned it. I always like mathematics as much as, I kind of tease it. I like things that are finite and have systems. And so I would just break down the family of the five, the yo, the two, step on the Spanish version, vosotros and ustedes. It's the same five. And all you do is just plug it in. So that kind of made sense for me. But really, what did it was when I would read newspapers so I could concentrate on the grammar conjugations. That's number one. So that was repetitive for the conditional future tense, past tense. It was making sense to me. There we go. Secondly, I would love to watch movies with Spanish movies with the Spanish, not subtitles, but wording underneath. Why? I want to practice my phonetic ear. Why? Because the doctor and I are going to be at a party and people are going to be screaming and there's music and dogs barking. I might get 50% of what she says. In English, it's easy. We can fill in the blanks. Not on the second language. And so you're almost once again putting on additional weight to see if you could get 60% or what happens when music's playing. Can you really get the verb? And so it was a lot of fun for me to say, got it now, because it was really working other parts of the brain. That was interesting for me. And really, it was the last thing was the intercambio, the speaking part, the engagement, the interaction. I always have a tough time understanding jokes because I'm translating them 3 weeks later when I finally get it. That's not the point. The point is that you're there and you're learning the manners at a dinner table, and you're learning when you would say don or doña before somebody's name, which is such respect. And you learn how to accept a second plate of food. And so besides vocabulary and grammar, you start adding culture to it. Wow, once again, it's another color in that crayon box. It doesn't end from everything to everything. I mean, it's really all the vocabulary, how you see it, how you react to it, the expressions people use. You should even learn the bad words. Not that you're going to use it, but sometimes it's creative. You're like, wait a second, really? I go, that's kind of cool. And so, it's a mature way to look at it. And you should know if people are speaking about you a certain way or if people are expressing a certain way. It's not saying that you have less class or sophistication, but you really should understand when people are speaking with you and how they're saying it and what they're saying. Sometimes you can ask for clarification before becoming offended. And as I mentioned, you're not on home court advantage. So you should really just be looking at things in an analytical way and taking out all emotion and putting yourself in so many different shoes. Is it easy to do? Yes, if you want to. It's just liberating, doctor. That's all. It does it make you vulnerable? Yeah, but no one's really here to mess you up. You're just willing to test yourself. That's all. And you're really in the now because of the translation. And you're on your toes because you're an expat and living abroad. And so what it's done for me is gonna a chispa, it's gonna spark of life. The kind of thing where if you're ever on vacation, things are very new, or when you're a child, you see things for the first time. Why can't we have that sort of experiences again? That's why people travel the world and they take pictures and come back. Well, I didn't want to come back, and I just didn't want to take pictures. I wanted to put my camera down and stay there and live my life that. And so that's half of the go-go juice that can get you to learn a second language.
And I was thinking about when you said, don't take it personally if somebody says something that seems negative in Spanish or whatever language, because even speaking English, so I have been married to international people twice.
Nice. Well
And
done.
even, first of all, even speaking English to an English person in a relationship, you can get the meanings wrong because you grew up in different families. You have different backgrounds. You just think differently. And so it is so easy if you take things personally to have a problem or cause a fight or have an upset.
That's
But
right.
if you just ask, what do you mean by that? Regardless if it's in English or Spanish or Whatever, I think that's the most important thing. But you're right, you need to know all the words. I had a friend in college that she spoke Vietnamese, and
Oh.
I could tell when she was angry because I learned the Vietnamese bad words, and she'd be like, me, me, and she was talking about me to her Vietnamese friend. I'm like, hey. That's
Yo.
all I said. I said, hey, stop talking to me like that. But it is good to kind of understand, but you can tell by people's tone
That's correct.
also.
I agree with that too. I like giving benefits of the doubt. And how about this, Doc? I like to fall on swords. Instead of saying, excuse me, I'll say, for my clarification, did you say ABC or 1, 2, 3? And everyone can laugh. And but that's all right because I'm bold and brave. You're from Georgia, I'm from Philly. We can handle it. And it's the kind of thing, well, let's see what would happen to you if you went to Georgia and you were asking for clarification questions. Could you handle it? So everyone needs to slow down and calm down. I'm the low-hanging fruit. I have a thick accent when I speak Spanish. I'm bald, you know. I got 3 strikes against me. But
Oh,
the beauty of it is, Doc, is that I can hold my own, not by cursing back or pretending like I want to fight them. No. Once again, by showing them the dedication in my vocabulary and grammar. I'll throw it right back at them. I'll tit for tat. And I guarantee, unless they've lived in the States or went to private school or studied, I'm going to crush them in regards to the language comparisons. And then I said, where's your English? That's not cool in front of all their friends. And then I roll. That's what we do.
Exactly. That, or else you can just turn it into humor. That always helps whenever there's tension or something where you're feeling like there's misunderstanding. Throwing in some humor or something funny gets everybody, it just distracts everyone and gets them off track of what they were doing in the first place.
Exactly. I'll teach them certain expressions that are cool. I try to speak like Philly, but a lot of it has to do with ego. Think about it like this. I work with individuals that are bilingual, earning an investment on that, making money off of speaking English. They went to school with individuals that never learned their English. So if you're in a group of 10 and 3 of them speak English, there's 7 of them that could have done it. Their egos get bruised. And so it's really not my fault. I can't hit the ball and drag Johnny. And it's not for everybody. But as I say before, I'm in an environment of linguists and bilingual individuals. So it's kind of we have that in common. We understood the struggle.
Exactly. So when you first came to Costa Rica, you were teaching English. How was that? How was that coming into an environment where, you all of a sudden had to teach a group of people? And not just a class, but they actually had to be able to use it on the phones.
Do you remember Billy Madison when he was playing dodgeball with the third graders? That's my native tongue, of course. I can speak exceptionally well. And so for me, it was easy. Is there a syllabus? What syllabus? This isn't University of Arizona or Abington. There's no teacher. I'm not going to get fired. My buddy's like, yo, man, thank you. I was like, thank me. Thank you. So you're telling me I get to do my class my way. And so I'm not going to teach you grammar, because you should have already learned that by now. And I'll work on a little thing here and there if you make one mistake, but it's really about advanced communication. You were talking about tone earlier, and I love that. I love strategic and diplomatic vocabulary. We stress the thesaurus. And we really try to have them concentrate on 30-second intervals for the give and the take and for the reaction. Because a 10-minute phone call does not exist, doctor. It's 20, 30 seconds. Phone calls combined. And I believe in introductions, bodies, and conclusions. Your body and conclusion does not exist if you can't land the intro. I believe in buying time, jumping clouds, and even romantic deaths. If you happen to get hung up on or something doesn't work out, at least if you're doing a perfect play, you have that momentum for the next call. It's all right. No one bats a thousand. But they really need to focus on positive escalation. So when they speak to a gatekeeper or someone that assists prior to a transfer, mention it verbally, do it in writing. So you create a happy circle. So if you call back, it's an excellent way to prospect. It's not just for business, it's just for social life anyway. It's the greatest thing you could do, doctor, you know this, is pay it forward and not ask for anything in return. And I love speaking about people behind their back because I know I'm saying great things about them. Because I don't want to embarrass them in front of them. But you'll never catch me using slander to make myself, I'm not going to lower to make myself feel better. No. You know, people talk and you know how people feel about one another. And so I love to give sincere compliments. And so when I came here, the English classes were very easy because they were very entertaining and kind of like a comedian that puts material out there and starts shaving it to give himself a perfect 5 minutes. Trained over 10,000 people, been doing it over 2 decades. I got over 2 hours of material, and I can go a full 8 hours if we want to do role playing, implement things in practice. But I can give you a solid 2 full hours of soft skills and phonetic micro expression reading and certain sort of rhetoric and delivery and vocabulary, psychology of making the call. And certain not tips or tricks, but things just to get you refocused again because of all the zigging and zagging and the distractions. And then on the flip side, when we listen to your calls in our quality control department, we have the luxury of recorded phone calls. So just like a mirror, these agents can hear themselves and they will know if they crosstalk, interrupt, too loud, too soft, too fast, too slow. Did they forget the military alphabet when reviewing the email address? What about your transitional sentences? Come on, you got to connect ideas. Why don't you rake a little bit and repeat what they said just to ensure that you know what they're talking about? These are very simple interpersonal soft skills that people can have to give themselves checkpoints. And when you have these checkpoints, you don't leave doors open. And when you get to the conclusion of your conversation, you'll probably convert and get that commitment. And it's not by hook or by crook. And I'm not angling. All I'm doing is, and you know this, my friend, from an educated point of view, you're the one making that decision. All I'm doing is leading along, maybe leading the dance, but allowing you once again to pace so there's no pressure. It's not the Wolf of Wall Street or what Hollywood makes telemarketers. I'm sure you have a lot of friends that might have made or received phone calls for a company to earn a living. There's customer retention at any company. There's upselling as well. There's referrals that are given to you. And if you have the confidence of somebody, the greatest thing you could get, and you're not going to believe this, is the exit interview. If you lose a client and they tell you why you lost it or the competition earned it, you'll make more money in the future because of that feedback. And if you're willing to take that sort of moment where someone calls the balls and the strikes and is a straight shooter with you, then you can grow from that. Does it affect your ego? Sure, no one wants to break a plate. But guess what, kiddo? That's what happens in the kitchen. You break plates all the time. That's why I have a stack of them. And that's, I've learned to absorb that. And as we mentioned about taking things in a personal way, that's not a personal way. If someone takes the time to make adjustments and balance my bike, that's beautiful. I'll take that all day long.
Exactly. So, do a lot of your call centers, are they actually doing outgoing calls, or are they taking incoming calls, or both?
We're about half and half. I do back office non-voice support with chat and emails, inbound customer support. We can do appointment setting and lead generation. And then for the mercenaries and the most talented, they're salesmen and saleswomen out there. And we don't do sports books, casinos, stocks, pharmacies, or sweepstakes. Nothing against it, but this is a very strict Catholic country. So as much the agents have the leverage, Amazon is here. So they can choose where they want to work so they don't compromise their ethics and can earn a very good living. And how do I compete? Because as I mentioned, Amazon, HP, Intel, and Oracle are here. Well, let's look at attrition. There is a forced attrition. If somebody comes to work later, they smoke weed at lunch, and they're not making their phone calls and they're a cancer. Doc, we gotta let them go. They're really not here. What happens if your husband works at Amazon, right? Or if it's closer to your home, or the schedule's good for the university? Or if you're so talented, there might be more lucrative opportunities. I'm okay with that. What will never happen at my call center is that someone is defaced on the floor, given the walk of shame. I don't throw people out the door. And my competition, besides my location, my game room, and me knowing your name, it's the squire to the knight. There are people that are here that want me to delegate and not just be lost amongst thousands. People want to know the boss. They want to learn. And I like people that have that sort of vigor, and they're assertive. I like when people knock on our door and say, "Are you guys hiring?" They say you're not supposed to do that today. It's only over the internet. Hell no, I'm a Generation Xer, man. Get this kid in here immediately. He's knocking on my door for a job.
That's right.
That's a great first impression. That's a winner. That's a champ. That's what you and I would do.
Yeah,
Of
that's
course,
what
I
we
would have
would
lost.
do. That's what I would do. In fact, I told my daughter that, I don't know, a year ago or something. She was looking for a job. I was like, just go over there. She's like, you gotta do the thing on the internet. I'm like, no, just go over there.
You do for 19 out of 20. But when you and I are sitting there having our afternoon cappuccinos, chilling out, by my pinball machines, next thing you know, we got a knock on the door and it's Maria. She says, "I saw the sign, call center, you guys are hiring." You and I would look at each other and go, "Bring this in right now." And so it's not like your daughter's looking for 50 jobs. She's looking for one job.
Good job.
So go find your Willy Wonka. There's someone out there just like you, and they want to hire someone like you. And I'd rather have someone without experience. I can't have someone that doesn't have an education. I didn't say that. But imagine if someone came to me fresh and was bilingual and had computer skills. They just never used a CRM before and made a phone call for a law firm or a movies and music campaign. That's great. I mean, could you imagine? And those are some of my favorite people, and they're the ones that have been with me over a decade, because it's almost like your high school sweetheart. A, you don't know any better, but then again, sometimes you might have struck gold when you're 18. And a lot of these people hit a home run on their first job because they speak to their friends, or maybe privately they put out resumes, or maybe went on an interview or two, but they realized how cold it is, or they didn't get the good vibe. They felt like they could be expendable. And they realized maybe I am in an okay place. Maybe that the cage door was open, the birdie does come back. I always love that philosophy. You're a good parent and a good partner when given freedoms, it's come back. It's almost like when my parents gave me no curfew back in the day. They say, as long as you call me and you're not lying in a gutter somewhere or the car is wrecked, just call me if you want to stay out late. I'm like, yeah, no, that's it. Of course, I'm calling them at 10 o'clock. I'll be home tomorrow. Just don't worry about me. But you follow certain rules, or you give where there's a level playing field where everyone has something on the table. I think those are the best relationships. And it's very humbling that you have 150 people come back the following day to continue to work on this. So it's a nice reality check every now and again.
So I have a big question for you. With your background as a linguist, and obviously you're great at communicating, there are so many of us who need to do cold calling for our business. Like, I mean, we're really actually reaching. I'm learning real estate right now, and so calling people, you want to sell your house? And it takes me courage just to make one phone call. And they're making like all day long, they're making phone calls. So what, you said getting yourself emotionally ready earlier. You said, being in that space.
Sure.
But it, is
Well,
there
Doc, let me ask you some
anything you can
questions.
say in the first 10 seconds that would keep people from actually saying hello, or I don't want to talk to you, or I do want to talk to you?
Absolutely. I have some advice there. But prior to that, just make sure that whatever the phone calls that you're making, you feel good about. It's those that hate their jobs or they feel like they're stealing or they don't believe in the product. That's a forced march. No one wants to do that. I have nothing against it, but merchant processing phone calls were probably some of the toughest campaigns that I've ever had. In making those phone calls, seeing if restaurants want to switch their credit card machines. It was very saturated. The lists were old. And the agents, as much as they wanted the job and they had experience, it just wasn't fun for them. They're getting FUs on the phone. That's what you don't want. But guess what? I made phone calls for real estate. I was calling FSBOs and cancels and expireds. We called for commercial, industrial, and land. I did this in Arizona for my brother's real estate company. So this is what Ricardo used to do, doctor, in order for them not to hang up on me. First, you have the luxury of the MLS, so you might be able to get to see what their house looks like. Obviously, they have curb appeal, a sport quarter. They painted their kitchen purple. So you let them know you love purple, right? Purple kitchen. So anyway, I would always do either a company name spike or an address spike. Let's just say, for an example, you're calling and you would just be like, 123 Main Street. How you doing today? And what you have is your anonymity. You're not anonymous for the whole call. That's shady. But if you're giving yourself, you said how much? 30 seconds, or you said first 10 seconds. Excellent, doc. Let's go 10 seconds. Let's just see if you can anchor and get any sort of stability and footing. Well, break down 10 seconds, kid. They pick up the phone. There might be latency there, but let's say it's a clean call and it's a hello, and you say something. Whatever you say, it shouldn't be too long. I said the name of your house or the name of your company. And then there's a breath, a reaction. That's your 10 seconds. I mean, we're not like 5 minutes in where we're grooving and we know the back and forth and it's a list of questions. This is, once again, it's a cold call. They're not expecting it. And you said, Richard, they're going to hang up on me. Yeah, because you're going to sound like a telemarketer by saying, do you want to sell your house? Or is this 123 Main? Is this 123 Main? You might as well go in bold. You like the old Vikings that were berserkers where they used to fight naked in the snow, and they freaked out their opponents, like, what's wrong with these berserkers? But yeah, man, they were in such a trance. They didn't want any armor, be as light as possible, just to get in there. And they were going all the way, and they were incredible warriors. And so you don't do this the whole call. We're not swinging double swords, but goodness gracious, if you're going to trapeze and jump, the first impression for me is to knock you out of that trance because your house is on the FSBO. You're getting 100 calls on a Sunday. Terrible, terrible. So I got to knock you out of it first, where it sounds like it's someone that knows you or it just doesn't give you the normal. And I'm not lying. All I'm doing is I'm not even confirming. I'm just saying what is. And I'm saying it better than you do. Like if someone says ABC Company, yeah, ABC Company. Come on, Susie, you got to speak better. Come on, I just put you on your toes. So it knocks them out of the trance. And then what happens, Doc, is that they're going to ask me my first buffer boomerang question. Do you see that? It's a buffer boomerang technique. Remember earlier you said in a very nice way about adjusting tones? Well, how about this? Action, reaction. I'm going to say, 123 Main Street. And then they're going to be like, who's this telemarketer? Which I doubt it. They'll be like, who's this? And I can say, Mrs. Jones, that's an excellent question. My name is Richard Blank. I'm going to name drop you to buffer the negative tone. I'm going to let you know it's a great question. Glad you brought it up. Repeat the question, as you know, to show active listening, so we don't have to repeat it again. I'm going to send back your question in a very positive way. So usually I'd be like, ABC Apple Company. And you're like, yeah, who's this? And I go, so glad that you asked. Susan, my name is Richard Blank. And then they have to ask me another one. Who's Richard Blank? That's a double dip of the positive reinforcement. They're not yelling at me and their tone's positive. They're just curious. So they went from like a 10 to an 8, now to an 8 to a 6.5. And that movement that you went this way, doctor, now goes that way in regards to momentum. Isn't that beautiful with the little bit of mass and space that we move? We added to our momentum and reduced an ego defense. So then you got to take your chance. Come on, it's the real time now. You said your name, who your company is, and then you have to explain why you're calling. But I tell you what, you said, Richard, we got to make 100 calls a day. You're not going to make 100 calls that last 10 minutes. You're going to have 100 calls that last 2 minutes, maybe some last longer. But you tell me if you're not going to name drop them, say the name of the company, buffer boomerang them twice, and let them know that your husband was so nice, or little Billy that answered the phone sounds so cute. How old is little Billy? He's 9. Does he play baseball? He loves basketball. Okay, Billy 9 basketball. Great. When's he going to be 10? Next month. Great. Next month. Okay. So when I call you back, Billy's birthday, basketball party, right? How do you know all this? Come on. I took copious notes. And these are the sort of anchorings that are natural. You want to sell your real estate? You're going to do exceptionally well, but I'm not going to sell anything to you unless I like you. And stop asking me about my house and how much I'm selling. And it's 3, 2, or 1% and open houses and great. Can we get to that in a minute? Why don't we make sure that you just don't judge me on what all these other people are doing? And prior to any sort of contracts, I'm learning about your son, complimenting your house, looked at your MLS a little bit, discussed things. And what did that do for me? It enabled me to get callbacks and set appointments for people to close. We did very well. But then I would do a self-wrap. Like your daughter saying, I shouldn't go down there. Well, the ones that do go down there boldly say, hey, unlike other people, I'm here. So unlike other people that just send emails or leave voicemails, doctor, I'm giving you a call at 10:30 on a Sunday morning about your home. Isn't that the sort of person that you'd like to work with? And so these are the sort of things that are true. As long as you stay in character, you're okay with your honorable intentions. It's the moment that you're angling, pushing, squeezing, or desperate, then you're out of character, my friend. And I'd be very disappointed in you. And you and I both know that you're much better than that. These are, as I mentioned, romantic deaths. Why? Because of what Shakespeare says, the romanticism behind either winning or losing, but you still are pure. All I said was your name. All I said was the name of your street. And I complimented your son. The fact that you've been bombarded with stuff and your brother's a real estate agent and you just wanted to see what calls came in, I get it. But I also get the fact that you didn't hang up on me in 3 minutes. And regardless of the outcome, I Chuck Wepnered. I went the distance with Ali, became Rocky. So I was always okay with the distance, regardless of the outcome, because my introduction was so solid. It was a longbow. It was a balance on the bike or the surfboard. I was getting distance. I was getting distance. And I was learning how to shave fat and the certain questions that you would ask. You'd always have to not just, like for an example, you just don't ask about the son Billy. Ask his age, favorite sport, what grade's he in? Why? Because there's a difference between interest and engagement. And I always think, oh, so you have a kid, that's great. What's his name? Billy. Great. So the next question is, okay, how old is he? Oh, really? Baseball too? Basketball? Third grade. And so I don't know about you, but it's not breaking down walls. All I'm seeing is distances from half court to 3 point to now we're at foul shot percentages. It's just strategic movement to give yourself easier putts on the green. I've seen that things are not guaranteed, but if I can reduce the sense of urgency, I gotta go, clock watching, interruption, and allowing me one by one to start building. It's very interesting where these things go. It's like Jenga. Don't kid yourself. Things kind of move on angles from time to time. You need to be spontaneous, like a Robin Williams. That's the beauty of this stuff. You can do 90% whatever you have to do, but there's always the 10% wild card, doctor, that pops out. And it could be there for a minute or it could be there for a second. But if you're not completely in that now, in that 30-second sort of checkpoints that I go, you might miss the dog, the son, the husband, the Jimi Hendrix in the background. Do you understand? And you know this. In my environment, we've eliminated three of our senses, the taste, touch, and smell. Our hearings must be expanded. And then for the vision, I encourage image streaming, descriptive vocabulary, colorful words, imagination, adjectives. And so by doing so, we've been able to, like a shepherd with sheep. You could wiggle still, but I'll keep bringing you in. And this is how I can catch people's attentions, because you might think there's limitations here. I think the limitations are when you're sitting in front of somebody because they're not congruent. Their audio never matches the visual, they're fidgety, and they're all over the place. The purest form to me is the phonetic form. Really is. And then the extra purest form is the duration. It's the spacing between the sounds. It's their answering speed, because your tone, rate, and pitch can be manipulated. Same with vocabulary, but people's reactions, I believe, are the most authentic. And it's either they're pondering or they're lying or they're excited or they're not interested. But that to me is the insurance policy checkpoint if I need to ask for more questions or someone I believe is not as committed as they could be.
That was beautiful. Thank you so
Thank you. God, I feel smart. I'm with a doctor. I'm trying to use
much.
big.
Because, I have conversations with patients all day long, and that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah, of course.
But sometimes the phone seems different, especially when you're not seeing someone. I like seeing people. Obviously, I'm an eye doctor, so I like seeing people. So
Yeah.
that takes me extra effort to do that over the phone without seeing the body language and everything going on. But you're right, you just have to listen to the tone. You have to listen for the pauses, for the tempo.
Well, that's my second thing I wanted to show you. It's the phonetic micro expression reading. That's where you see the spikes and the dips on speed and sound. You know someone well, but if it's a first time read, if you do see that, that's when we stop and we ask if things make sense or sounds good. Can you overkill it? You can never overkill insurance. Never. You can ask the questions multiple ways and stuff, but no, I prefer to do a 2 or 3 second, hey doc, sounds good, right? Compared to assuming, because that makes an ass out of you and me. Next thing you know, we're 9 minutes in and we never confirm the third thing that we spoke about. And so I love pin down and tie down questions and clarification questions. These things make sense. And sometimes I can be bold and brave, like you with your real estate. You can go, listen, I'm sure you like at least one of my options. You didn't say you like them all. I'm willing to say at least you like one. You hate 99, fine, but at least like one. And so I've been able to do that before. It's almost like the reverse psychology. Really, you start with the seed compared to the bag. And I'm willing to begin with any sort of genesis, any sort of spark, anywhere. And I don't care what you like. Find an area for me on my 360 circle where we can begin. And if they're constantly quiet, but they still haven't hung up on you, doc, You're still in there because
All
once
right.
they hang up on you, they're finite. But if they're quiet, they kind of still like you. I don't know what it is. And you can even say, I know you still like me. I gotta find something. And then all of a sudden they'll start laughing and please enjoy this. Don't be a print where you carpet bomb these calls and grind. You need to be a painting. And don't give yourself an average metric or talk time or wrap-up time. No, my friend, artists should never be commissioned. And if you have a conversation for 45 minutes or for 5 minutes, I don't care. You wu-wei it, you let it happen naturally. You know what? You have such bedside manner and you have soft skills. And I'm sure a lot of your clients have told you how kind you are when they're in a moment of stress. You show empathy. And you show confidence. You're going to help their eyes out, but you know they don't feel good, or the drops don't feel good, or certain things happen. And motherly, big sisterly, best friendly, you're the best. And I know you're extremely bright and learned, but there are a lot of doctors out there that are just mean. And someone would be willing to drive 4 extra hours to go to Mrs. Nice Doctor because kindness is such a good medicine, too. And you might not like going to doctors, but if the doctor's kind, you might not mind going to the doctor because you know it's just going to make you better. And so I'm proud of you for that. It's a very giving thing that you're doing. And I know that you've been there at times when people have probably cried in your office or been exceptionally scared or realized that things are going to change. And I don't know what you do. You probably just once again, tell the secretary, give me a couple minutes for the next appointments, and you just take off your thing. You sit down next to them and either hug or hold a hand, or you just sit there quietly until somebody gets their composure. And then they apologize to you for taking your time and they're embarrassed for crying. And then you say, no. This is what I signed up for, and this is why I'm here. Now, I can't compare what I do to what you do, being a doctor, but I've had people where they have pressure with their families and expenses, and they'll cry in my office, or they'll lose it on the phone, or they'll, as I say, you stop, drop, and roll. You stop what they're doing, you drop whatever they're doing, and you roll to my office for some coffee or to feel better. And isn't that fun? Where as a professional, you're allowed to take off the doctor or the CEO hat and just be a real person, and they sometimes don't expect that from you. You're supposed to be serious doctor, and I'm supposed to see, and then they see a certain side of you that hugs and gives a Kleenex or sits down next to and understands. And then they're the people that tell 100 people how amazing you are, or they're the employee that never goes away because you saw them at that moment. And you have people that have been with you forever, haven't you? And you get tons of business through referrals, don't you? I know you do.
I
And
do.
that must make you feel very good because the market speaks. And I know that real estate's different from being an eye doctor, but it's still going to be you. And you're still going to get the same recommendations. And people are going to choose you over others because they're going to compliment your tone and you being very nice to them.
Right. And I mean, one of the reasons that I want to do that is one, I would like my time back because when I'm with patients all day, then I don't really have a, I can't get up and decide what I want to do that day. I have to be in the office. So
That's
that's
right.
one reason. But the main reason is I think everybody deserves a nice place to live. And so what excites me is a lot of times we're talking to homeowners who there's something wrong. That's why we're calling them. Either
Yeah.
they need to move for some reason, or they owe a bunch of money, or there's something where they actually need to sell. And so the part I like is helping that person out of that problem, but also, providing a place for someone else who needs a place to live to live. So
That's
for
right.
me, it's win-win when everybody is getting something and getting taken care of.
And they're in a honeymoon stage. They're excited, right? Everyone's giggling and running around and imagining. So, yeah, definitely join in that Christmas Eve moment. Anticipation is the best drug.
Exactly. So I want to change the topic because there's one thing I know about you that I didn't read out loud, but totally different topic. Pinball machines.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about that. Because on this show we're talking about what makes you happy, what gives you joy, and I read it on here somewhere. You have, just tell us how many pinball machines you have.
I am so proud to say that I'm the largest collector of American pinball machines in Costa Rica. I got a total of 15 machines right now, six jukeboxes, an air hockey table, and an assortment of other machines. But I'm a Generation Xer. I was born in 72. So I grew up in the 70s and 80s where the arcades were the best. Now, the machines, a quarter could last you a half an hour, but a pinball machine, that quarter or even 50 cents could be gone in a minute. So it was too much of a luxury for me. And I just didn't really understand the games yet. But fast forward a couple of years ago, started my business, had the space, had the income, and I went treasure hunting. It's interesting. I love arcades. They don't exist anymore. And so in Costa Rica, there would be a lot of arcades that were out of business. Or just people that were just selling their machines. So I'd just get my boys, get a truck, drive 4 hours to Perez Zeledon. And the next thing you know, I'm pulling out a 1990s Last Action Hero Data East Arnold Schwarzenegger pinball machine out of some dude's bodega. And they're selling them for like 300, 400 bucks. Put another 500 into them because you can order the parts from the States and get an electrician. Next thing you know, you're sitting on a $4,000 to $5,000 machine. But it's not to sell, it's the restoration. But if I share a secret with you, my favorite decade is the 1970s. I got three machines from the 70s. I got a 1970 Camelot 71 Expressway and a 76 Freedom machine. I love them. Unlike the games today where the play field is a laminate or a sticker, the 70s and beforehand, it was painted wood. So sometimes you could see the cracks. If you look at the original marquee, especially that sort of pinball art, the side art on the machines. And the earlier machines were much easier. They didn't have the computer CPU tablets and stuff. It was really just a couple wheels and some cables and fuses. And so they last. They're very easy to fix, very inexpensive. But I tell you what, that's the one hill I'm willing to die on. My wife knows it. She can win 99% of everything and then some. But if there's a gorgeous pinball machine and I have an option to grab it and I got the space, of course I'm going to buy it. Come on, you know what makes me happy? It's a wonderful medium for the agents to enjoy. I have seven machines in my house. I got eight here at the office. And so they play here. I have the machines at the house for pinball marathons or just relaxing. But it makes me so happy. And I tell you what, your audience should buy one. You'll be the coolest cat in your block, and everyone will want to hang out in your den playing pinball. And so, and you can get them for a good price, like the machines from the 70s and 80s, you can get for under 2 grand, sometimes under a grand. It might be beat up a little bit, but could still work. But there are certain companies where if you get an owner's manual and an electrician, it's very easy to find replacement parts for 20 cents up to 200 bucks if you got to get one of those LED screens. But what a beautiful pastime. And don't tell me that virtual pinball is equivalent. Not even close. You got to feel the machine. Elton John and The Who had it perfectly when they said, being a pinball wizard and doing those. But thank you for bringing that up. That is my dessert and favorite topic in the world. So yeah, I love my pinballs.
Was gonna say, talking about making calls all day, and if you had like kind of maybe a bad call, you could go play pinball, get happy again, and get back on the phone.
You're laughing, but it's true. So let's just say you do take a break, which we have breaks here at the center. Instead of having a cigarette, getting on your phone for Instagram, or just zoning out, by being on the machine, it's almost like a runner running in place at the stoplight. You're not speaking, but you're still working the brain with hand-eye coordination, the lights. It's a way to relax, but not to, ice a kicker. The worst thing to do in the gym or athletics in anything is to cool off. You need to still be moving and grooving. And so, what do you do? Yes, ma'am. Get on those pinball machines for a couple minutes And then don't be surprised when you come back, you're not even sharper because of that hand-eye coordination and especially timing. It's just another way to work the timing.
Exactly. Well, I really love that. And I really enjoyed having you on today. It's been great. So I have some personal questions now. I know you love the pinballs, but one of my questions I ask everybody is, what gives you the most happiness and fulfillment in your life right now?
Paying it forward. Electromagnetic energy, where whatever I do can make someone feel better, more secure, give them a better day. I'm doing just fine at 51 right now. So, once again, the golden jewels lose its luster. What I'm really looking to do is just make happy.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being here. One last question. What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
Well, first, I can't thank you enough, doctor. I had the best time. But my best advice, and I think you'll agree with this as well, is just not to be hard on yourself. Regardless of the outcome, if you do things with honorable intentions, you should be able to put your head on a pillow at night and sleep well. But you do need your structure and discipline. Don't be sitting at home hoping. Let's use the idea of leaving a castle to slay a dragon so you can come back as a prince with a hero's journey. Life is about being bold and brave, not reckless and careless. But you only get 100 years. And also, you have to be realistic. I'm not going to be in the NBA. I'm not going to be in a rocket to the moon. But if you know not your limitations, but where your grass grows and what either comes easy or even the best test, what are you willing to put dedicated practice in? Because if you really go above and beyond, obviously, something's right in that area. Be responsible with your family and finances. But if you have 5, 10, 20, or 30 hours extra in a week to distribute, to test waters, to network, do it and drink as much life as possible. So then one day you can be on your podcast telling amazing stories.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Doc. Had a great time.